Log Talk Radio.
We are here on the beach where a giant shark has just eaten a girl swimmer. Well, Mr. Jaws, how was it?
Dynamite!
And what did she say when you grabbed her?
Please, Mr.
I know sharks are stupid, but what did you think when you took that first bite?
How sweet it is.
Mr. Jaws, before you swim out to sea, have you anything else to say? With me now is the local sheriff. Sheriff Brody, the shark will be back for lunch. What do you intend to do? Just arriving is oceanographer Matt Hooper. Sir, if someone is attacked by a shark, what should they do? We are going aboard the fishing boat of Captain Quint. Captain, will you be able to catch this giant shark?
Captain,
when you catch one of these sharks, what do you feel like?
Like a rhinestone cowboy.
We've just sighted the shark again. He's coming straight for us. Captain Quint is shouting something at him.
Get your baby one tonight.
Hey, Jaws, the captain says he's going to catch you. What do you think of that? Uh-oh, here he comes again. They've hit him. Mr. Jaws, why doesn't anything seem to hurt you? He's coming right onto the boat. Mr. Jaws, why are you grabbing my hand?
Wouldn't you give your hand to a friend?
No, wait. Mr. Jaws, that's not the way this record is supposed to end. Help! Help!
Good evening, everyone. This is Carl from Carl's Music and Movie Emporium, and I hope you enjoyed that little segment. That was the great Dickie Goodman doing what they call a cutout record, where they get snips of songs. And of course, it's Mr. Jaws, and of course, Jaws was the first real summer blockbuster, and it came out in 1975. We won't be talking about that tonight. I want to introduce my co-host and friend and grand poobah of the Empire. That would be Stephen Ronquillo. Say hello, Stephen.
The show's not broke tonight.
Yes, it isn't. We're back. We're real. It's here. It's Thursday. I know it's not Tuesday, but we're here. So one thing did happen over the last couple of days, and I was going to mention it on Tuesday. So anyway, I got a lot of cheese. I ordered some cheese, and lots of cheese came in. And it makes me very sad to eat it because Peter Salas, the voice of Wallace from Wallace and Gromit, passed away this week at the tender age of 94. Had a wonderful career. Was in several Hammer films. Many BBC series, but most of us know him as Wallace from Wallace and Gromit. And I just want to say my condolences to his family, and he will be truly missed. Are you a fan of Wallace and Gromit, Stephen?
Yeah, I like your stuff.
Well, you know, this is for all those who liked it, and particularly I want to send out my condolences to my very good friend Elliot Wessel, who really introduced me to a lot of the shorts in that preceding Curse of the Were-Rabbit. And because I know
I'm sort of mad that the sequel to Curse of the Were-Rabbit didn't come over here because it was funnier.
Which one was that?
The one about where Wallace made a Frankenstein monster of himself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have not seen that. I've seen clips, though. Really, really good stuff. And Peter Salas, you will be missed. That is for sure.
Carl.
Go ahead.
After the show, we're going to have a nice cup of tea and some cheese.
Yes, we're going to have a cup of tea and cheese and maybe a couple of nice English biscuits to go along with that. But, Peter, you are missed, and I'm very sad that you're passing, but you had a great career. So, moving on, today we're gonna split 75 in two segments again, because it's just insane the amount of films. And today we're going to be focusing on the science fiction and horror, the exploitation drive-ins, and the blaxploitation films. So I thought we would start with the blaxploitation because it's the smallest of the group. And to be honest, at this point, we've got a situation where you basically have reached the peak of blaxploitation, and now it just starts to go down. There's not as much output, and unfortunately, there is a lot of stuff out there that doesn't turn out to be that good. However,
and
of course,
this
if you
is
were with,
when the
go ahead.
The Black Congress and all of the movements against the black exploitation really seen their effects happen.
Mm-hmm. You know,
three of the big ones we're talking tonight are more like uplifting dramas.
Yeah, and they wanted to go into that, but of course, you know, if you were with us last week, not that it's certainly a blaxploitation film, I guess you would call it, but it was written, of course, by a white Jewish guy, and that would be Coonskin, and of course, we did a watch of it last week. And actually, we got it hooked up with Bakshi's Facebook page. So that's really nice. But anyway, we talked about the Coonskin last week, so we're going to skip that one. But we're going to go on to one of your favorites, and it was actually extremely influential. So I'm going to give this one to you, Stephen. And that would be Cooley High.
Cooley High was to Black American Graffiti, and it's a great film, and the star of it should have been,
we got something going on. What is that?
What do you mean?
I heard like this big noise that was coming through. It sounded like Morse code almost. Try it again.
Oh, sorry, I'm
start talking about Cooley High.
Sorry. But, yeah, I forget who was it. He was in J.D. Revenge as a star. Glenn Turman. Yeah. He should have been a major star off of this. He is amazing in it. The whole movie is amazing. And here's a question for you, Carl. How many blaxploitation movies do you know actually got legit TV shows that were based on them and not just on their themes?
This would be about the only one.
Yeah.
There was a Shaft show,
There was a Shaft TV show,
but it didn't last.
Oh, God, yeah, the Shaft show. I forgot about that. That was good. But the one I'm talking about is What's Happening. That was Cooley High's the TV show. The second star of Cooley High became a star when Glenn Turman wouldn't come back for TV because back in the day, TV was a step down for an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, this has one of the best themes ever from a blaxploitation movie, and that is, it's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday.
Yes.
And heck, when Boyz II Men covered that song in 89, they even named their album Cooley High Harmony.
Yeah. It's a great film. And the film director is Michael Schultz, and he did a lot of really good, solid family style blaxploitation. Then he went on to do things like Rat Race and that, but a decent director. And this is one of the best.
And he did one of the best comedies about nothing, too, from the 70s.
Which is?
Car Wash.
Oh, yes. Yes, Car Wash, absolutely.
No plot, just these guys going through the day. And that's basically what Cooley High is, too. There's a little bit of subplot, but basically it's like American Graffiti, except this is about 1 week or so in the lives of these guys. One of them's about to go to the Army, the other one's about to go to college, and all that.
Yeah, it's a nice slice of life. It's a well-acted film, and definitely recommend it. We're going to follow it up with another family style blaxploitation, and that's Cornbread Earl and Me.
Cornbread.
Cornbread! Come on, let's
you
hear it.
No, you got to say like Cornbread, because that's the way the guy who sings Cornbread. It says about 5 or 6 times.
Cornbread!
Yeah.
So I'm going to leave this one for you, too. So go for it, Stephen.
This one isn't as good as Cooley High. This one, when it gets to its major point, which happens halfway through the movie, then it beats you over the head with it again and again and again. But the first half with Lawrence Fishburne in it, well, Lawrence Fishburne is basically the star of the movie in his first starring role, about 8 or 9. It's just great. But then an incident happens halfway through, which... Hell, even Boys in the Hood used this exact same fucking plot sequence for something
yeah.
that happens 3/4 away in it.
Well, it's a major, you know, they've used it many, many times as
yeah.
a plot point.
Yeah, and don't you remember in, let's see, oh yeah, Don't Drink Your Juice in the Hood? Why did my brother, who was about to get college, get shot? Because it happened in Cornbread Earl and Me, and that's really what we're copying.
Yeah. Older brother gets shot and killed, and he has to learn to live without him. Oh, it is manipulative, but it's a decent film. It's a decent film. Okay, moving on, I'm going to talk about two Pam Grier movies together. And that would be Sheba Baby and Friday Foster. Not your top-notch Pam Grier films, but God damn it, they're Pam Grier films. So if you like watching her kick ass and be gorgeous and upscale, then these movies are for you. Remind me, which one is Eartha Kitt? Is that Sheba Baby?
That's Friday Foster. That's the one where they really tried to push her in the mainstream because you had Yaphet Kotto in it. You had Scatman Crothers. You had Eartha Kitt.
Well, the one with Eartha Kitt, it's because of Eartha Kitt I like the movie. Because she's
yeah,
just
me too.
So goddamn awesome. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, she was the third Catwoman. In,
Take out the word third and say that again.
Well, she was the Catwoman.
Right. She was only one
there
of
were
two,
others
but she
that
was
tried,
the Catwoman.
She was the Catwoman.
Just hearing her purr and that, just damn.
Yeah, really.
It was that
Absolutely.
Moment I didn't care about race or anything. I was like, ooh.
Take me, I'm yours.
Yeah.
So, which one do you like better, Friday Foster or Sheba Baby?
Friday Foster. Sheba Baby was Sheba Baby. It was just another wannabe Jack Hill film without Jack Hill.
Exactly. You know, not nearly as rough and tumble. Neither one of these are rough and tumble like Coffee.
This is when they were trying to move her into the mainstream, and honestly, I wish she would have made it. Well, actually, she did,
you know what?
But she never
she
stopped
had
working.
A really good career. You cannot, you know, I mean, she may not have been a big star, but damn, everyone knew who she was, and she's been in movies all her career and TV shows. She's done well. So you got to give her credit.
Yeah,
and it is
never
a great
stopped
pan
working.
Career. Yeah, she's never stopped working. So, continuing with blaxploitation, okay, so we had Lady Sings the Blues. And they try, and Diana Ross did a wonderful job as Billie Holiday. So
the
they made
Billie
another
Holiday.
Movie especially for her called Mahogany. Do you know
where you're going? That's the
whatever,
only thing I like about the movie.
The song.
That and Billy Dee Williams telling her to go fuck herself at the ending.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a great film, but it certainly made enough money. But not one of my favorites.
Well, the thing was,
okay,
when
so
everybody went to
talk.
See Mahogany for the first week, they were expecting to see Richard Pryor and Lady Sings the Blues type movie, and they didn't get it.
No, they didn't. Again, what happens is when they put out these star vehicles, and they think these people, these blaxploitation actresses were going to be stars, they softened the whole thing up. And so it becomes mush. There's not that edge. And you need the edge in blaxploitation. I really believe that 100%. So we're going to talk about two black-themed westerns. We'll start with a good one first. Jim Brown, Take a Hard Ride. And of course, directed by... what?
Jim Brown, Fred Kelly, Jim the Dragon Kelly.
Fred the Hammer Williamson.
Yeah, Fred the Hammer Williamson, Jim Brown, Jim Kelly.
Yeah, three heavyweights. And a Western directed by?
Umberto Lenzi.
So you have an Italian Western with blaxploitation Western. It's damn good. It's solid. And it is...
But the problem is by 1975, this is the same problem that The Stranger and the Gunfighter with Lowly and Lee Van Cleef went into. And that was the blaxploitation genre was dying down and it wasn't making as much money. And the Western is definitely dead on its fucking TOA. It's dead.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't make one of the best Westerns ever, which is one of the most fun ones. And it wouldn't have made a penny.
No, it didn't. Did not. Of course, I saw this on cable on HBO. Where I saw most of my blaxploitation was HBO. But solid work.
And why would you put Jim Kelly in this movie and not have him shit talk?
You know, it meanders a little bit in the middle.
Yeah,
but
like I said, why would you put Jim Kelly in a movie and not have him talk at all in it? He plays a mute. One of the best shit talkers plays a mute.
Well, you know, they needed somebody, and he said he'd do it. You know, they could have hired Thomas Rasula. Anyway, that's an inside joke between us. So that's a good, solid Western. Then we have a really fucking bad one.
Oh, God.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, but I'm afraid. What is it?
Oh, be afraid. Run and hide. We're talking about Tom Laughlin, otherwise known as a.k.a.
No.
Billy Jackson.
No.
The Master Gunfighter. One of the shittiest movies ever fucking made. God.
The one movie with the guy with the six shooter, that, Carl?
That shoots 8 bullets. Magically.
You can't have a
six
shooter shoot 8 bullets.
Six shooter that eats 8 bullets.
There's only one line in the movie that rules. He has a six shooter that shoots 8 bullets. You can't have a six shooter because with that shoots 8 bullets. Why? Because a six shooter shoots 6 bullets. It's horrible. It's a remake of the Japanese film Goyoikin, done by Tom Laughlin. And since it was a remake of a samurai movie, there is almost no gunfighting in the damn movie. And everybody else is acting like a drooling jackass, including Barbara Carrera, who was so stoned on coke, she has said in interviews, that she don't even remember making the damn movie. She didn't even know she was in it. The fan brought a poster of it at the convention. She's like, I was in the movie with Ron O'Neill?
Yeah, and poor Ron O'Neill. I feel so bad for him in this movie.
Because he's acting. Damn. I mean, he's acting.
He's acting and nobody else is.
And everyone
and it was
making
one of the last films
the
he actually started, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. He was like, you dumb idiot. Why are you acting in this piece of trash? Because it's my fucking job.
Yeah. Listen, I love that man. Of course, we're talking about Ron O'Neill, who starred in Superfly. And unfortunately, his career was hurt because he had cancer. Like, right, didn't he get it, like, right after this? I think. Or maybe
no,
he had
it. No, he was in a couple. He was in Fort Apache, the Bronx. He was in a couple of films in the 80s before his cancer. But what killed his career is a self-directed vanity project, which I don't know if you passed over on purpose. And if you did, I don't blame you in that. Superfly TNT.
No, we well, let me put it this way. I did. I did.
And there's a reason why, folks. It makes you want to punch somebody in the mouth for no reason.
It makes you basically want to take a gun and just shoot yourself. You know, not a good movie. No, we're passing that one by.
Speaking of what we just said in the past 30 seconds, there's a film on this list that fits all those qualities, except that it's sadder because of how bad it killed the person's career, and this is still in blaxploitation.
Which movie are you talking about?
Richard Roundtree.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're not going to get to that. We're bypassing that one. Do you want to mention it now?
Yeah. Man Friday.
Go ahead. You
the only Robinson Crusoe movie
the,
with
the
gay
audience.
Man Friday. Once it got into the hood that Richard Roundtree was playing a role where he wanted to be fucked up the ass by a white man. Yeah, that's how bad it killed his career. Oof.
Yeah, it did, but remember this, he did do Q.
Yeah.
There are always high points after a low point. So we have one more movie in blaxploitation. And it's a real interesting film. It's not one that is as well known, but those of us that love blaxploitation know it quite well. And it's called The Black Gestapo. So go ahead, Stephen. You work this one out.
This is one of the darkest, meanest films that the blaxploitation genre you can see. It's about a guy who runs a Black Panther unit who joins this military guy, and they create a Gestapo unit to get rid of the mafia in the hood, Harlem. And after that happens, the Black Gestapo guys take over and become just as bad as the mafia guys were. You haven't lived until you've seen an army of black men dressed SS soldiers doing marching routines to Hitler speeches in the middle of Watts.
It's this movie is surreal. You know, I don't take this movie as they're really making a statement. I, in many ways, to this, this is a real satirical gem to me, the satire and that in it. And it's brutal. And, of course, you know, it's power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so to take the Black Panther movement, and remember, this is a black director and screenwriter, and then compare that to Hitler, that didn't make them any friends. Trust
well,
me, by within
that,
the Black
Panther. By that time, anything good that was in the Black Panthers was dead, and they were into dealing drugs, and Bobby Seale, the leader of the Panthers, was dealing with a big heroin habit of his own.
Yeah. Yep, it's a pretty brutal film, and it is recommended, but it's not a movie that I think you would enjoy, but I would say you need to
it's
see it.
It's not for beginners.
No, it's not. That's a good way to put it. All right, so we're gonna go from blaxploitation into the exploitation and the drive-in stuff. And we'll start with the drive-in, okay? So we actually talked about this. There were three Mama films. Big Bad Mama. What was the Cloris Leachman one?
Big Bad Mama, Crazy Mama, and Bloody Mama.
Okay, so there was Bloody Mama and Big Bad Mama. Now we have Crazy Mama. And we've talked about these. But good, solid film. Of the three, I think it's the second best of the three. What do you think?
Yeah. Crazy Mama is more of the lighter American Graffiti style female gangster film of the 30s. It had the soundtrack. It had the cars. You could tell they actually spent money on this.
Yeah. And it's a good. So I remember seeing this in the theaters. In fact, all of those ran my drive-in theater. And they're just so much fun. Corman had this wonderful way of looking at product. And basically, tits, ass, action, little bit of comedy, 90 minutes, get it over, next feature. And let's have enough that the kids really enjoy it. He did focus in on the teenagers and the young adults. Because going to a drive-in was a communal experience and was an escape for these kids. And I can certainly attest to that because I was that age at that time. I was 17 now. And I loved going. And so perfect drive-in piece.
Yeah.
Okay, so
Crazy Mama was
the
perfect drive-in movie. Bloody Mama was a hell of a lot more serious and adult than the other two.
No,
Big Bad Mama had
Big Bad
William
Mama,
Shatner
the one with Angie Dickinson, was like just absolutely bonkers with the skin. It was like unbelievable. Anyway, we're going to go on to this. We're going to keep going. And we talked about Jack Kill earlier. We talked about Coffee, and we talked about Sheba Baby and Freddy Foster trying to be Jack Kill movies and not making them. Well, he came out with one of the greatest of the drive-in films, and that would be Switchblade Sisters. In fact, so good that Quentin Tarantino, when he started his video company Rolling Thunder, this was the first movie he released under that title. And it's a gang picture, girl gang picture, and it is brutal. It is just fantastic. Action, everything about this.
And put out with one of the shittiest titles ever, its first run, which is White Flop.
Yeah, but you know what? It became, I know at my drive-in, it became a standard for like 3-4 years. He would run it all the time. At least once during the season.
Yeah, didn't have it under the Jezebel's title or when they got their head out of their ass and gave it Switchblade Sisters?
The first one was Jezebel. And then after that, they got it out of their head, out of their ass, and went to Switchblade Sisters.
I mean, just listen to what I'll call that brutal, violent, da 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 da, and think of the title, The Jezebels. No.
Well,
and as soon as Switchblade Sisters, yeah, but as soon as it came out of Switchblade Sisters and that moment in the trailer of them backing the guy up in the elevator corner and pulling their switchblades out, the movie exploded after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and it did really well. Okay, so we go on to another major, major drive-in. Starring Jan Michael Vincent in one of his best roles, and that would be White Line Fever. Now,
oh God,
it didn't run in my drive-in because this, I would think, was more of a Southern piece, wasn't it?
Yeah, Southern piece, and it only shown in a drive-in about 4 or 5 months, and then he sent it straight to CBS Late Night Movie.
But solid film. So why don't you tell me a little bit about it? It's been a while since I've seen it.
What it is this is one of the trucker films. He plays a trucker who comes back home and then has to, and then they're trying to get him to sign up to import illegal materials in his truck, and he doesn't. And they come and fuck with his family, so he has to kick ass.
Yep, basically, if you fuck with a hero's family, then you're going to get your ass kicked. And that's exactly what happened. We're not talking about, you know, a real intricate, plotted film, but just one that just starts and just revs its motor and just keeps going and just keeps accelerating throughout the film. By the end of the film, man, it's wild what happens. It's a great little action.
And it's really one of the first films of the trucker subgenre.
Mm-hmm.
You would get, and I don't talk about Smokey and the Bandit because we probably will talk about that in a later show or not, but you had shit like Highballing. Convoy.
Yeah, Trucker's Woman.
Yeah, Trucker's Woman. Breaker Breaker with Chuck Norris.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and then, of course,
the
subgenre, too, of CB movies, too.
Yeah. And don't forget, what really kicked off the trucker genre was the ending of, what was the one with Kirk Douglas as the cowboy trying to get away from the cops in Lonely Be the Brave?
Yes.
Because with that ending of the cowboy being killed by the trucker, and then the trucker basically saying the trucker is the cowboy of nowadays, that's what really kicked it in the gear.
Mm-hmm. And good saw film. Again, another Roger Corman film. And we're going to move on to a film called Framed with Joe Don Baker. And I want to talk a little bit about the director. Director was Phil Carlson, who was this really good action director, B-movies of the 50s. Best film he ever did was a film called The Phoenix City Story. You need to see that. It's friggin' amazing. Now, Carlson is rather old at this point, but he came up with one good, solid film to go out on, and this was his last film, and it's Framed with Joe Don Baker. So I know they made a MST3K of this. Well, fuck them. They also did one of Mitchell, which I'm okay with. But this movie I really, really liked.
So, yeah, this is one of those movies that when this first hit the drive-ins, it was cut. We didn't get the uncut version until it hit VHS, and uncut, this is one of the meanest and nastiest Southern exploitation films ever. It's brutal as shit. I mean, it has the famous scene where Joe Don Baker takes a guy and then hooks his ear up to a car battery, and you basically see the damn thing melt on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there's the scene with the politician too.
Yeah.
You know, where the politician is trying to scare him, and he basically just beats the living crap out of not the politician, but his bodyguard.
Yeah.
And of course, you know who his bodyguard is, right? You remember?
No, who? I forget. It's been a while.
Sid fucking Haig.
Oh, the man.
So Joe Don Baker beats the shit out of Sid Haig. How often does that happen?
A lot in the mid-70s, because scarily after Walking Tall, Joe Don Baker was a big star.
Yeah, and of course, don't forget he was in a Bond movie, too.
Two.
He was in two Bond movies.
He was a good guy. Felix Leiter and Pierce Brosnan series.
Yeah, good stuff. So we have one more to talk about as far as the drive-in stuff. And I would take it that you know this. I saw it briefly on... it didn't come up to our drive-ins because it's a moonshine movie. And it stars Jim Mitchum, who's the son of Robert Mitchum. And if I remember, this one's not that good. And it's called Moon Runners.
Fuck you.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I'm wrong.
It's one of the greatest. I'm not going to talk about the movie. I'm going to talk about a little incident, which is there. Moon Runners... Here's the thing I'm telling you about. Here's the plot description, Carl. If it sounds familiar,
okay.
It's about these two good old boys from Hazard County who had just got out of jail for running moonshine, and them and their uncle Jesse.
Yeah, I think we might be talking about the Dukes of Hazard.
Hazard, right. So basically, the producer sold the rights to the, well, got the rights to the Dukes of that story stolen from them, and he sued CBS, and they had to play Moon Runners and said this film was the basis of Dukes of Hazzard, which it was.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also a clause, if they ever made a movie of it, they would have to pay him $50,000. You know.
Nice.
So what do you think Warner Brothers did in the late, early 00s? Did they do the right thing and pay him that piddly amount, which it really is nowadays? Or do you think they said, fuck him?
They said, fuck him. I hope he sued.
And that ended up costing them $10 million.
Nice.
And that's why really the Dukes of Hazzard movie bombed, because of how much they had to pay them in the lawsuit. But it is a very good, very fun movie, and you'll see why they took that to be the television show. Jesse's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell's wrong with you goddamn boys? You're in jail for brawling? Why couldn't you have been in jail for something respectable like stealing a car or moonshining, you sons of bitches? It's fun. It's on YouTube. Catch it if you can.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So we're going to now change, and we're going to go into the sexploitation material. Oh, no. Actually, we're not. We got one more.
Oh, good.
Oh, good. Okay. And we're talking about... I could have put this with blaxploitation, but not really, because this is probably one of the most fucked up movies I have ever seen. This thing is just... Oh, my Lord, this thing is bizarre. And, of course, you know what I'm talking about, right, Steven?
Is this the one that we talked...
Slim Pickens.
Yeah.
Shelley Winters. Who else is in it? Dub Taylor.
I don't know about the movie crawl, but goddamn, do I love me a fresh tomato. You want one?
And I think we've been talking about Poor Pretty Eddie. Of course, that's only one of like six titles for it.
A.K.A. Moonshine County Rape, A.K.A. Redneck County Rape, A.K.A. Black Woman's Revenge, and a shitload more.
Yeah. Okay. I cannot tell you how much of a WTF movie this is, but basically you have, who is it, Leslie Uggams, right? Leslie Uggams is this singer who sings at the Atlanta ball game, and is driving away and gets into an accident, or was she pulled over
her
by the cops?
Her car breaks down. Her car breaks down.
And she ends up in this little town where Shelley Winters runs this hotel, and she has a retarded son, right? I think
that's Carl Strickland.
Yeah, and the rape happens, and it's really just bizarre. So, Stephen, just give him a little more about how fucked up this movie is.
I mean, the one who rapes in the title of Poor Pretty Eddie is an Elvis impersonator who thinks he's God's gift to women. And this movie goes fucking insane real quickly. And what does it do when it cuts away from the scene where Eddie first rapes Leslie Uggams? Does it cut to something good? No. Does it cut to a symbolic shot? No. Does it cut to a dog fucking and then them going, "Hey, Doy, get Junior over here. He's got to see how this fucking thing works sooner or later. Aren't these damn dogs going at it?" Yes, we have a 3-minute scene where he talks about dogs, where they're looking at a dog's fucking and how impressed they are by it. We're dealing with that level of insanity, people.
And I'm telling you, Shelley Winters goes all out. I mean, Shelley had been in Bloody Mama, and she's done her exploitation stuff. Of course, she's in Poseidon Adventure. But this is like she's playing, the wife of King Lear, Ophelia, as a southern harlot with a lisp. I'm not joking. Everything is so over the top. And
it has the best slim-picking line ever.
Yeah. Well, yeah, go through some of the lines because I was just about to.
You get the best one. I'll set it up. Well, Slim Pickens is writing out an arrest report, and she's telling what happened, and then he asks her this question.
No, you go ahead, because this is the one I'm thinking of, but I don't remember exactly what he says.
Did he bite you on the titties?
Yeah, she bite you on the titties.
And it goes on. Yeah, hell, I don't blame him. If I had a chance, I'd sure as hell bite on them titties, too. They look good. And Leslie Uggams is looking horrified over there, like, what the fuck am I doing in... No, there's
oh,
like,
without a doubt, she just has the look of a deer in the headlights all the way through. It's not a performance. It's like, holy fuck, how did I end up here?
And then they take her to the Union Hall, and Dub Taylor and the whole gang is going to rape her. Yeah, if he raped her, let me see the good.
Oh, it gets even more politically incorrect than that.
And the politically incorrect stuff isn't what makes this movie batshit crazy. It cuts to some art film angles. It's like it shows the first rape and then the dog scene. Then there's like 3 minutes of the camera just traveling over this countryside, showing this beautiful mill for no fucking reason.
Yeah. This one has to be seen to be believed. So if you're a fan of WTF or just really friggin' strangeness, you got to see Poor Pretty Eddie. Okay, so here we go. Okay, well, we're going to go into this exploitation now. Okay, so who remembers who Xaviera Hollander is? Now, Xaviera Hollander was better known as the Happy Hooker, and she was a madam of a New York brothel. And she wrote
the
a book
New York
that
brothel.
Became... What?
She was like the biggest... She runs
yeah,
the
she's
brothel.
The biggest madam of all time. Yeah. This is way before Heidi Fleiss. But she wrote this book called The Happy Hooker. And so they did a series of three films, of which the first one was released in 75. And of the three films, this is certainly the worst of them. And the reason is, I don't understand this casting, but they cast Vanessa Redgrave as Xaviera Hollander. Now, Vanessa Redgrave was in Marat Saad and a really fine actress. And so she has, so you have this movie where she's a hooker and that there's no nudity and she just outclasses everything. This should be a sleazy little gem. And it's like watching an art film with no nudity.
Yeah.
And just maybe
there's
sniggers
the
at the sex.
In the book where she talks about one of her first tricks, who beats her and rapes her in the ass. You remember that
right.
part, Carl?
Yeah,
in
I
the
do.
In the movie, oh, he was rough on me, but he taught me so many lessons I needed to learn to be a hooker. I was forever grateful to him.
Wow. Yeah, it's bad.
Bad movie.
Go to quarter. Time out. Okay, so we're going to go to another bad movie. But a bad movie that you can enjoy because it's just batshit weird. And so, of course, you know, in 1972, we talk about Porno Chic. We talk about Deep Throat, of course.
Deep Throat.
You know, she has the clitoris in her throat, you know, and it was the first big X movie to cross over to women, so on and so forth. And, of course, the actress was Linda Lovelace. So she had gotten out of the hardcore, and she decided to do this film.
Oh, let me say something real quick.
Okay.
Everybody in Deep Throat puts in hilarious performances with hilarious, witty asides, except for Linda Lovelace.
Yes.
So they decide, ooh, we're going to make a comedy. Let's pick out the funniest one in Deep Throat. Everyone knows Linda Lovelace, but she wasn't funny. Who cares? She has that name recognition.
Oh, and she has tits. Scatman Crothers.
Well, no.
Yeah, that's true. So anyway, so you have a movie called Linda Lovelace for President. It was directed by Arthur Marx, who actually also directed Sheba Baby the same year. Good, solid, you know, B-movie director. One of the most interesting casts I've ever seen, including... our beloved Scatman Crothers, who, of course, we talked about last week with Coonskin. And would you believe it, Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees is in this movie. Along with a lot of, I think Jackie Vernon is in this too. It's just one of those silly, weird little movies, you know, she's running for president and free sex for everybody and lots of TNA, and it's pretty horrible, but...
And no sex.
Yeah, man, Crothers and Mickey Dolenz, how could you top that? No, seriously.
I wouldn't call
you
it
tell me
exploitation.
What?
I wouldn't call in a little late for President sexploitation.
Yeah.
No.
I agree with that.
There's no sex in the fucking movie. It's
oh,
like
there's TNA in it.
Put Linda Lovelace with sex. Yeah, there was a lot of tits and ass and MASH too, but you wouldn't call that a sexploitation movie.
Oh, this was a sexploitation movie. It was.
Without the
everyone's
sex.
Chasing after her to fuck her. Come on. It's a sexploitation movie. It's a tame sexploitation movie, but it's still a sexploitation movie. And then we go from Linda Lovelace for president into truly one of the most bizarre movies of all time. I'm going to let Stephen do this one because, to be honest, I have never seen this. I have only heard about it, and it's like one of the holy grails. And that would be the insanity, the absolute what-the-fuckness of Thundercrack. Go, Stephen.
George Cukor's Thundercrack, the only porno film that runs close to 3 hours. Well, no, some of them are long, but it was a, back then it was the first porno film to run 3 hours long. And the weird thing is about it's about two couples who get stuck in a haunted house, where the madam of the house's fetish is to fuck virgin guys in the ass with a dildo.
Yeah, we're talking a classic movie here.
Oh, it's just bizarre. It's like being on strong acid. And there's one scene, the most famous scene in the movie is a guy gets jacked off by a girl in a gorilla suit. And he's talking about how he was a zookeeper before he was fired and had a love affair with this gorilla. And the gorilla shows up in the end and they fuck.
Okay. Maybe not as insane as a box of cream of wheat, but pretty friggin' out there.
No, it's as insane as Rent a Dream stuff. Except Rent a Dream stuff has a linear plot line or a through line in his movie. This movie just throws everything in it and just, damn. It's out
okay,
on DVD. You need to get it. It's good. But goddamn.
Okay, so there we go. Now we're going to talk about four of the better sexploitation films. We'll start with the one that isn't.
Good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, these are good. Okay, Russ Meyers.
Good,
let's talk a little bit about Russ Meyers. Russ Meyers started doing nudies in the 50s with the immoral Mr. T's, and then went on to do the great Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. He had great films like Terry Harry and Raquel, but he always loved bosomy women, let's put it that way. And so
big
he started
women,
out...
Big titty women, come on. Say
what?
It, big titty women.
Big titty women, okay, there you go.
Yeah.
so he, one of his big films in the 60s was Vixen. So in 1975, he comes out with the sequel, Super Vixens, starring the inimitable Kitten Atabadad. Top heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and of course, Ushi, our wondrous Ushi, Ushi Degard, otherwise known as Catholic High School Girl in Trouble. We'll get to that. But I love Russ Meyers. Russ Meyers has this cornpone humor and sexuality and just so much fun. You could tell everyone's having a blast on this movie. I love this film. I have the set. I have the fiction set.
And plus that's Colleen Brennan cursing out a guy for not having a hard on.
Yes, it's true.
Come on, you son of a bitch. I got my titties and pussy out, and you ain't even hard, you asshole.
You know, and I'll tell you something,
I love
too.
I
know that there are certain females out there that feel that this is very exploitative. But when you get to Russ Meyers and his women, they are strong women. I mean, let's not forget Faster Pussycat Kill Kill with three of the most, you know, kick-ass women in film. He always respected his women and always, if you take a look at these films, they always had it over the men. They always controlled the men. So any more to say about Supervixen, Stephen?
Yeah, Colleen Brennan is hot.
They all are.
Colleen Brennan to me is what another girl that's coming up later in this show, I think, is to Carl.
Okay, we can work with that. I understand exactly what you're going for on that one. Okay,
yeah.
So Emmanuel had come out a couple years previous, actually the year before in 1974, and was a big hit. So the director, Joaquin French, did his follow-up, and it was The Story of O, which is an S&M fable. And it was rather successful, and it's actually a pretty good film. Again, we're talking about softcore in this case. The one thing about Joaquin is his camera work is just like, it's like looking at paintings. I mean, he really is special that way. What's your thought on The Story of O, Stephen?
Well, do you remember what Carter Stevens said on an earlier show about how he did S&M videos with no sex?
Yes.
That's The Story of O. There's really no sex in that movie.
No.
God damn, is that S&M in there hot?
Yeah. I mean, again, you're talking about, you're at the end of porno chic at this point. And these were the last ones, to me anyway, that had any cultural cachet and crossover to the women,
yeah,
to the female audience.
Yeah, was a popular mainstream director for a second.
And then after this, he didn't become that mainstream. Though I do love his Perils of Gwendolyn, which we'll get to in a couple years. So anyway, that's The Story of O. And now we're going to go to Valerian.
Klaus Kinski. Wait, we forgot to mention. It has Klaus Kinski as the main guy. You haven't lived to see Klaus Kinski beating a girl's ass with a grinding crop. It's just beautiful.
and his facial expressions are priceless.
And you're like,
because they're basically the same one all
before.
The time.
Yeah. He has done this before, and he is good at it. I am impressed.
So we're going to go from one foreign director to another, and we're going to go to Valerian Borosius. I can never say that last name. But he is the one that gave us Borosik. There we go. And he gave us, in the previous year, he did the Immoral Tales.
Well, to help you start out, he gave us the art porn genre.
Right. Of which just Joaquin I would put into that category also. But Borosik is the king of art porn, no question.
Immoral,
and so he gave us
Immoral
Tales.
Yeah. Immoral Tales and Immoral Women.
Well, I don't want to get into Immoral Women because that's later. But Immoral Tales
were
four short...
Well, I'm just saying the titles,
Yeah, but were four short films that were very, very sexual in nature. Okay? They were going to add a fifth film, you know, fifth element, but he liked it so much that he pulled it from Immoral Tales and made a feature film called La Bête, or The Beast. And he did a prologue to it was like he had the ending, so he had to do a prologue to it. The one thing I have to say is that the female in this, who is Jane Birkin, is one of the true goddesses of film, and a lot of people have forgotten about her. She was an English.
Close.
What was that, Stephen?
I just said the word rose, and you should know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Why don't you explain it to our audience?
It has one of the sexiest female masturbation scenes in history involving a rose.
Yes.
Just damn. And Carl? Kidding me. Hello? Carl?